Mountains can be made into molehills, but until recently, heavenly bodies seemed invincible. Astronomer Mike Brown proved it wasn't so when he played a major role in having Pluto demoted to something less than a planet, and some people have vilified him for it. He tells his side of the story in his new book, How I Killed Pluto and Why It Had It Coming. It's published by Spiegel & Grau, a division of Random House. I'm very pleased it has brought him to our show today. Hi.
Hi.
You begin your book by saying that, like everyone else, you knew what a planet was from the time you were 5 or 6 years old. What was your understanding of a planet?
Oh, it was the same as everybody's. I had been taught, just like everybody else, about the nine planets. I loved planets as a kid. I had a poster on my wall of all nine of them, and Pluto was, I think it's safe to say, was my favorite, just like many people's.
It was also the pizzas in the expression, "My very excellent mother just served us nine pizzas."
Yeah, that's
the way
not,
we remembered all of the planets in the solar system.
That's not the one that I learned as a kid, though. So it was interesting. Mine was Martha visits every. I have to now think about the planets to get the right order. Martha visits every Monday and just stays until noon. Period. And I always thought that period was a little bit odd at the end of the sentence.
Oh, so that one works better if we get rid of Pluto.
Yeah, now it's gone.
You grew up in a town where space was the dominant industry?
It was. Huntsville, Alabama. I grew up when they were building the Saturn V rockets, and everybody in town was involved in NASA and rockets in some way.
Including your father?
Including my father.
What did he do?
He built some of the computers that went on the Saturn V and also worked on the buggy that went around on the moon after the first couple missions.
So did you want to be an astronaut?
Oh, that's all I really wanted to be was an astronaut.
You say that you were always interested in the planets, but not particularly in looking at the night sky. Can you see the night sky in Huntsville?
You know, it's northern Alabama is a very dark place, and I did like the night sky, but I think I had the same disconnect for many years that many people do, that you see pictures of planets and you see pictures of the stars, and you don't realize that they're actually up there and you can really see them, and they're beautiful.
How old were you when you noticed when you happened to notice what looked like a pair of moving stars?
Yeah, I was in high school, and I had been watching these very bright stars going across the sky for several months, and they were bright and they were close enough together that you could notice week after week that they were in slightly different locations. And it's, you know, in retrospect, I sort of think of myself as kind of an idiot for not realizing it at the time, but they're, of course, planets. It was Jupiter and Saturn.
Because stars don't move across the sky.
Yeah, stars stay in the same fixed patterns all the time, and the planets move across them.
But it also was an unusual time, wasn't it?
It was. They were close together. So once every something like 15 years, Jupiter and Saturn get very close together, and you can see them crossing each other in the night sky.
Was that what got you seriously interested in pursuing astronomy?
It's the thing that that made me interested in the sky, in addition to just astronomy as sort of an abstract field. And I had already been subscribing to astronomy magazine and learning as much as I could. But that's when I first realized, you know, these things are really up there. It's important to look.
But planets, not particularly the stars.
Oh, I liked planets. I liked stars. At the time, I actually really, really liked all of it. I still do, actually.
What's the original meaning of the word planet?
Planet is a Greek word which means wanderers, because, of course, these things are the things that wander across the sky.
So they noticed in the ancient times that there were the fixed stars and then there were these wanderers.
Yeah.
When did people start thinking they might be part of – have some kind of connection to our sun and our solar system?
Well, the original planets, actually, the original wanderers included the sun and the moon. So there were seven original planets: the sun and the moon, Mercury, Venus, not Earth because the Earth was the center of the universe, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. And so it was always known that these things, or always thought that these things, circled the Earth and were part of our universe, of which we were the dead center.
And we were not a planet; they were planets.
Exactly.
So most of the planets were already known before people started discovering planets.
That's right.
We don't know who first noticed Mars or Venus.
No, those are the classical planets of antiquity were must have been just noticed by everybody.
My guest is has written a book called How I Killed Pluto and Why It Had It Coming, Mike Brown, who says that he was actually trying to find a new planet not to kill Pluto. How many people in history have actually discovered new planets?
Well, if we now only have the eight planets, the only two planets that were discovered were Uranus and Neptune. So Uranus was
because they were not visible to the naked eye.
That's right. So they were only discovered once telescopes were invented.
And did people accept those discoveries immediately?
Instantly, Uranus was you could see how big it was. You could see the disk of Uranus in a telescope, and so both Uranus and Neptune were immediately recognized as fitting the pattern of the other planets and part of the big planetary bodies in our solar system.
Have other claims been made?
Well, Pluto, of course, was discovered in 1930, and it sort of followed the pattern of discovery. Uranus had been discovered, Neptune had been discovered, and then Pluto was discovered further out. And so astronomers thought at the time that it was quite massive, like Uranus and Neptune, and didn't have anything better to call it except planet. So it was a planet from 1930.
Well, why would they think it was massive? Can't you, if you're seeing it through telescopes, you can get a sense of its size, can't you?
You can.
In relation to other planets?
It was so small that they couldn't tell.
They just thought it was very far out.
It was so far away, but they couldn't see any disk of it at all. So nobody had any idea how big it really was. And the funny part of the history is that they were looking for something massive because they thought Neptune was being tugged along in its orbit. It turns out it's not. It was just bad data from the early part of the last century, but they thought it was. And so once you get this idea that you're looking for something massive, you find something. Well, that must be it. Pluto must be massive.
What about Ceres and Pallas?
Ceres and Pallas actually are the first two asteroids that were discovered. Ceres was discovered in 1801, and when Ceres was discovered, it was the original eighth planet. It was actually before Neptune was discovered. So Ceres was called the eighth planet. Pallas was called the ninth planet. The next asteroid was the 10th, the 11th. And you can look at textbooks from the 1830s with all the 11 planets.
But didn't Herschel coin the term asteroid to describe those heavenly bodies as a way of kind of protecting his discovery of Uranus?
I think so. Asteroid means star-like, and it refers to the fact that when you look through a telescope at these asteroids, they only look like stars. You can't see a disk about them. And so I really do think that he was trying to point out that Uranus is big and these are tiny little things.
So when were they demoted?
It happened from about 1850, somewhere between 1850 and 1900, with the discoveries of dozens and dozens and dozens more asteroids. People very quickly realized that this area between Mars and Jupiter is so populated and with objects that are so small compared to the planets that it makes much more sense to lump them together as asteroids in the asteroid belt and not call them the 151st planet.
So they were demoted into asteroids. Earth was demoted into a planet.
And the sun and the moon were demoted from planets also.
The sun maybe promoted, is actually yeah. upgraded, isn't it?
I think that's probably right.
And this is all the result of the development of better and better telescopes, taking us in both directions.
That's exactly right.
So what happened? There was a lot of confusion at the turn of the century because we were discovering all of these different things and different people weren't exactly sure how to label them.
The story with Pluto is very similar to that of the asteroids. Pluto was discovered in 1930, and it was the only one known out there for a long time. But starting in the last part of the last century and of the last 15 years, astronomers have found thousands of objects out past Neptune in that region where Pluto is.
And then they realized there was this thing that's come to be known as the Kuiper Belt.
The Kuiper Belt is where these thousands of objects reside out past Neptune.
No, are they just the detritus of space?
That's exactly right. They're sort of the leftovers at the edge of the solar system where there just wasn't quite enough material to get together and form planets.
So with that knowledge, is it possible to even discover a new planet in our solar system?
I think the answer is probably no. It's not impossible that there might be something massive really, really quite far out. But I suspect at this point we have really found all the planets that there are to find. There's a lot more to find in the outer part of the solar system, but the planets, I think, are done.
Well, now we're looking for planets in other solar systems.
All right. So there are now many more planets in other solar systems than there are in ours. So that's good.
What were you looking for?
when I started doing my survey of this region of space, when I described it to people, I told them I was looking for the 10th planet. And by that, I meant something bigger than Pluto, because it seemed pretty reasonable that Pluto's a planet, and I didn't think that was going to change anytime soon. And if I found something bigger, that was the 10th planet.
And when you began looking for planets, you say you lived in a little cabin with no indoor plumbing. Is that typical faculty housing at Caltech?
No. I think I might be the only faculty member at the time who lived in a cabin out in the woods like that.
Well, how do you go searching for a planet nowadays? You look through a telescope? That area has been pretty well photographed. Or do you read computer code?
Both. And you write a lot of computer code too. So you find a telescope that can look at large swaths of the sky at once and repeatedly take pictures night after night after night. And just like that description earlier of Jupiter and Saturn, you look for things that move.
And you were at the Palomar Observatory.
Yeah, outside of San Diego. That was the best spot to look for these planets.
In the old days, that just would have been a telescope. Now it probably is as computerized as it is telescoped.
It's actually fantastic, because I observed with that telescope almost every single night for 10 years. And I lived 3 hours away in Pasadena, and I actually never went to the telescope in that time. It was always completely roboticized, and I ran it from home.
How did you meet your wife during this time?
I actually, strangely enough, I met her at Palomar Observatory. She was I was up there for looking, using one of the other telescopes, looking at some of these objects, and I had promised to give a talk to a group of people, and she was the director of this group that brought people up. Walked in the door of the telescope, and that's the first time we met.
Is it a coincidence that you got engaged and were given tenure and you discovered something in the sky that seemed bigger than Pluto almost at the same time?
Well, all within about a week of each other. It must be a coincidence, but it's amazing how life seems to work out that way.
So you discovered this thing, Object X, right?
Yes.
And you gave it a name that I can't pronounce.
The one that we discovered then is called Quawar. It's Q-U-A-O-A-R, and nothing else that in the English language has, I think, that combination of vowels in a row. So it is a little hard for people to pronounce.
Why did you come up with that name?
It's the name of the creation force of the Native American tribe that was indigenous to the L.A. Basin. So we thought, you know, planets are always named after Greek gods and Roman gods, and let's try some local stuff. We were there in L.A., and we thought we should name it for their creation god.
Now, you've included the story of your marriage and your child. A.M. Holmes, who reviewed your book in the Sunday New York Times Book Review, said that a woman couldn't have written this book the way you did without fear of being taken less seriously as a scientist. Do you understand why she felt that way?
I do, but I actually think that she is 100% wrong. And she
grew up in this environment. Her father was a scientist involved in space technology.
So I think her point is correct, but the implication is wrong. Her point is right. It would be very difficult for a woman to write a woman scientist to write a memoir and spend so much time on family life. But if the goal is to allow people to do that, to make it safe for everybody, then the right way to do that is to have male scientists and female scientists and everybody writing these sorts of things.
We haven't addressed your title, and we have very little time. How I Killed Pluto and Why It Had It Coming.
Yeah, so it really did have it coming, and I think that's an important point that a lot of people still don't understand. Everybody knows Pluto was demoted, but a lot of people still don't quite understand why. But it really did have it coming.
Why?
It's not a major part of our solar system in the way that everybody thinks of it when they look at these cartoon pictures on lunchboxes and placemats where it looks like Pluto is almost the same size as all the rest of the planets. It's really quite tiny. It's half the size of the moon.
Do you think it's one of the reasons people got so upset is because Pluto is also the name of a popular Disney character?
I mean, as silly as that sounds, I actually think yes. I think that helps. I think it's the cartoon dog, these cartoon views of the solar system, and just the general feeling that people knew about nine planets and astronomers are big meanies for taking one away.
Did you get confirmation for your discovery through the Hubble?
Can
you just go up there? Can you just say, I want to look at a certain part of the sky with the Hubble and, and get them to do it?
You usually, to get telescope time on the Hubble, you go through a years-long process of applying and then having it come through. Occasionally, for very exciting discoveries, you can basically call them up and have them do it right away. And for this one, they were pretty excited. Something that was the size of Pluto, they wanted to make sure that they got their telescope on it right away too. So we got a very pretty picture of it right then.
So now we have we could just make this into a planet and keep Pluto as a planet.
That was one of the options that astronomers might have come up with. But I actually, as you know, I would have been the discoverer of the 10th planet, which would have been quite fun. But
you
I'm
and
really,
Herschel.
Me and Herschel. But I'm glad that it didn't happen. This is the right way to describe the solar system, and I'm happier as the non-discoverer of the 10th planet than I would have been as the discoverer.
I don't have time. I was going to ask why it took you so long to announce your discovery, because others might have beaten you to it.
Yeah, it's a common tension in science. You make a discovery, you really need to work hard to check it out and to write the scientific papers. And in the meantime, someone else may discover it. But that's the way science works, and it's a good way to have it work.
Mike Brown is the Richard and Barbara Rosenberg Professor of Planetary Astronomy at the California Institute of Technology. In 2006, he was named one of Time Magazine's 100 People Who Shape the World. His book, How I Killed Pluto and Why It Had It Coming, is published by Spiegel & Grau. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.